Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and, of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, they call it the hole. And you probably don't want to go there unless you're a mighty powerful sorcerer. Plus, Kimberly Hart's return to Angel Grove is not going well. Helen Cole finds that her father's stories have a little life of their own, all the better to slay her with. Yes, the Major Spoilers crew is here to talk comics and chew bubblegum, and we're all due for a dental checkup, because the Major Spoilers podcast has gingivitis. And it's on the air.
Welcome to the Major Spoilers Podcast, episode 1067. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. Major Spoilers Podcast does not have gingivitis because we do go and do regular dental checkups like you should. Every 6 months, go in for the cleaning, go in for the x-rays. It'll save you a lot on the back end. So if you would like to talk more about gingivitis, my youngest has gingivitis really, really bad. And the reason is he doesn't brush his teeth like he should. Yeah, listeners, right. If you have thoughts on gingivitis or any kind of tooth-related issues, we would like you to join our conversation and tell your story over on our Major Spoilers Discord server. You can join the Major Spoilers Discord server for free. We'd love to see you join our growing community of awesome spoilerites. Link in the show notes. And everyone is anxiously awaiting for you to come in. All right, let us take a look at some comic book reviews. I don't know what Matthew is reviewing just yet, but this week from Dark Horse Comics is Helen of Windhorn by Tom King and Bill Quisevilly. And I'm going to tell you right off the start here, ladies and gentlemen, I got this book based on the Bill Quisevilly name alone. Right. Ever since I first saw her do that Sugar and Spike Legion of Superheroes story from way back in the day, like a decade or so ago, I have loved her art. Her art is great. Her art is fantastic. It is super detailed, which I really, really dig. If I only had one kind of like maybe nitpick, is that characters with short hair, and I understand it is a short hair thing, but she always draws the characters with short hair like wind is blowing through their hair. And that's kind of weird from panel to panel, but I understand because it's short, curly hair that we get to meet from Helen Cole. Now, the other reason I'm very interested in this story is a lot of people love the Tom King. A lot of people hate Tom King, but I'm always interested to see what Tom King is doing because I think his stories are generally very interesting because Helen of Windhorn, he did that CIA Middle East thing, right? Sheriff yes. Baghdad, Sheriff. The Supergirl, story that's being converted into a movie, the Adam Strange book that is out there, and probably a couple of others that are not on the top of my head. But Tom King likes to do something, especially with those stories that I mentioned, where he plays with memories and points of view in the person that's telling the story, right? Because when we talked the Supergirl story on the Major Spoilers podcast last year, when Rand was joining us on that, the nature of the story changes because of who the narrator is. And all it appears in the same way with the Adam Strange story. And we've got that Adam Strange story coming up later this year on the Major Spoilers podcast. All deal with people's perceptions of the facts and what is real and what isn't real, what is exaggerated, what is being falsified, etc. And so when I go into Helen of Windhorn and the story starts off way later, like 1994, I want to say, where somebody is interviewing an elderly woman, and she was talking about the time when she was the governess for Helen Cole in the 4 years that she was living at Windhorn, the house, that immediately my ears perk up and go, okay, what is Tom King doing here? And he's telling the story through this woman of Helen Cole, a 16-year-old whose father, C.K. Cole, a semi-famous pulp writer, who died. And so Helen, the woman, has to go and go to Texas and pick up the girl and bring her back to Windhorn, this palatial estate owned by her grandfather. And she's going to live there. And that when she does get there, Helen, of course, is drinking and swearing and doing all the things that, you know, 16-year-olds shouldn't do, especially in the presence of a governess who is trying to raise her properly. And we learn that the grandfather is not around, but he'll be back in, quote unquote, a month. And that Helen sees something on the grounds of Windhorn that freak her out each night. And by the end of the issue, we find out what that thing is. And we also see the return of the grandfather. And then you start thinking, okay, what is this like? If the Supergirl story was True Grit, what is the story that Tom King is trying to tell here? And a lot of people have already compared this to The Wizard of Oz meets, I forget the other one that they're comparing this to. Kind of like a smash-up of those two tales. But I really think that the vibe that I get, and I could be wrong, the vibe that I get is maybe there's some Princess of Mars, John Carter stuff going on here, and a little bit of Conan the Barbarian, the writer, Robert E. Howard, because of the way that the father, we don't know how he died or what caused him to die, but Robert Howard's death, you know, he killed himself. He was from Texas. He took his own life. He was a drunkard. He was a fighter. He was, you know, all of these things. And it seems like maybe C.K. Cole, Helen's father, is maybe that famous Howard writer. And then just because of the nature of the grandfather being away for a month and then showing up to save everybody at the last minute also feels very Adam Strange-ish slash John Carter-ish. And so I wonder if that is the story that Tom King is telling here. And so I'm very fascinated to see what is the tale that he is spinning? Who are these characters that he is presenting to the reader? And more importantly, because we're getting this story from a different person, not an omnipotent person, but from somebody who is telling the story, what are they leaving out? What are they not telling us? Where is the big twist going to come from? Now, on the plus side, I'm not going to have to wait a year. At least I hope I don't have to wait a year for this series to come out because it's only a 6-issue series. But then again, I think Supergirl was supposed to be 6 issues and they stretched that out to 12. But I'm really digging Helen of Windhorn. I think this is a great book. I think that if you are, first of all, if you're a fan of Bilquist Evely, you need to pick up her stuff right now. Anything that has her name on it, pick it up. Tom King, if you love him, pick it up. If you hate him, pick it up. Because I think you're going to be able to find something that will outrage you again and get you to go out there and start yelling and hammering about how Tom King is the devil. And if you like Tom King, you're going to go out there and say, you know, Tom King is great. He's a writing god, and this book proves it. I like this book a lot. I'm giving it 5 slices of meatloaf out of 5. I'm super sold on where this story is going to go. If you read the solicitation for it, it tells you what the story is about, but it's also not telling you what the story is about. And there does appear from just the solicitation that, yes, they will be traveling to different worlds, which, again, is either that Wizard of Oz thing that people have brought up or that John Carter thing that I've already brought up. But I cannot wait to see where the story goes. So for first issue, it has me hooked. There's a great mystery involved, and I'm giving it 5 slices of meatloaf. Go eat that stuff. Go eat it now. Meat prices are high. Thanks, Obama. There you go.
What?
Yeah, blame everything on Obama. That's what everybody does. Matthew, also out this week, it's another installment of the Power Rangers. What are the Power Rangers up to now? Oh, this is the Amy Jo Johnson Power Rangers, The Return.
This is. Yep, this is Power Rangers, The Return, number 2. This is a book that takes place 20 years after the defeat of Lord Zedd and Rita Repulsa, which apparently took place 10 years after the Rangers were actually activated by Zordon. So essentially, at the end of last issue, we find that Trini, the Yellow Ranger, has passed away, and her niece has her morpher, and she has shown up on Kimberly's doorstep and asked her what happened 20 years ago. So what we see throughout most of this issue is the story of the Rangers' last mission, and it has a couple of moments that honestly, I didn't see coming, but I also feel like make perfect sense, especially if, as Amy Jo Johnson is, you're a Tommy Kim shipper. So essentially, imagine 25-year-old Power Rangers who have been doing this for 10 years. Rita and Zedd have killed Zordon, and they finally have a way to try and stop Rita and Zedd with a device called the Benevolator that will turn everybody good when it detonates.
I love these. Okay? I love these names. The Benevolator. It will make everyone benevolent.
Right. But here's the thing. This is not a Power Rangers style story the way that it should be. It's called the Benevolator because Billy named it, and Billy wants to pretend that it's 1993 and he's still 16 years old when Tommy and Kim actually have to fight Rita to try and set the thing off. And I don't think this is going to be a big spoiler, but Kim has to murder Rita Repulsa.
Oh no, a bad guy dying. Ah, somebody's soul is corrupt. Right,
No, it's actually weirder than that. And then, of course, we have this discussion between the two of them about how the Benevolator is damaged and someone has to stay and set it off. And the more they talk, the more it's clear that the Benevolator is a bomb. And I'm not sure what kind of a bomb it is, but it's definitely a bomb. And they're arguing back and forth and arguing back and forth. And Kim finally yells at him, takes off her glove and shows him her wedding band and says, "Till death to us part, remember?" And a da-da-da-da. And then something happens, and bad things happen. And then we find Selena, the niece, trying to talk to Kimberly and asking her questions that are a little bit pointed, like, did it feel good to kill Rita? Didn't some little part of you really love killing Rita? And then they surprised me. And I want to say that as a comic book reader, being surprised is one of the most wonderful things that can happen. Because I've read about 11 billion comics. I have read more comics than any sane person has, and I feel like the fact that I am able to speak this coherently is probably a testament to my absolute lack of parenting as a child. Because, you know, having no belief structure, you can just sort of hook onto everything, and I was raised by a 25-inch black-and-white Magnavox television. So, at the end of this issue, I'm surprised. And then at the final panel of the final page, that surprise is compounded by another surprise that was set up on page 2 that I missed the first time through. But when I actually saw it and realized what was going on, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's even better than I thought it was going to be. So here's the deal. If you have not been reading Power Rangers The Return, but you're really interested in kind of seeing what I would call an adult take on Power Rangers without going, you know, incredibly dark and saying the word child soldiers, which just makes my eyes roll back in my head. I know, Stephen, you love that Power / Rangers thing from years ago.
But for what it was, I thought it was great.
It really made me want to put a fork in my eye. Although Dawson was great. I feel like the fact that they got Vanderbeek to actually play the Red Ranger, that was well done.
Yeah.
You know, since this morning, I actually watched the actor who played the original Red Ranger saying how a certain historical German ruler was a pretty cool guy with, and I quote, some great one-liners. I just feel like in my 50s, the world has gone mad. So if you want to see a world where things have not gone quite as mad, but gone.
Wait, so
mad
the original Red Ranger has gone Red Hat?
I'm not sure if he's full on Red Hat, but I know that he's facing prison time for falsifying COVID support. And I know that I know that he's at least Rogan. Got to hear all sides of everything because, you know, there is no truth and nobody really knows anything. And wouldn't it be cool if Alien came down and give us some chiclets? No, Joe, it wouldn't. Shut up. Okay, not bitter. Here we go. Power Rangers The Return, number 2, written by Amy Jo Johnson and Matt Hodson. Art by Nico Leo. Very good book. 4 slices of meatloaf. If it does not surprise you, I promise you this. If you buy this comic and it doesn't surprise you, you can tear it in half, and you get to keep both halves. That is my guarantee to you, friends, because this is a good comic book. And you should read it.
And listen, ladies and gentlemen, I know if you tear it in half and you get to keep both halves, unfortunately, if you tear it in half, you also do not have each half worth $2.50. It's now worth 0. So just kind of keep that in mind as well. Plus, you shouldn't be tearing up your books anyway.
Comic books are not. Yeah, don't destroy literature. Molière really pumps my nards. But here's the thing. It is a good comic book. If you're following the Boom Studios Power Rangers, absolutely you want to grab this. If you're a fan of the Power Rangers 30th anniversary from last year, and you're capable of keeping separate tracks of various alternate universe continuities clear in your head, you definitely want to check it out. If you're Steven, you probably want to check it out. It's good.
I mean, Amy Jo Johnson. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I just shared something on the Twitter, formerly X, Amy Jo Johnson going into a comic book shop to talk to the comic store owner. And the comic store owner is like, doesn't recognize her, and then he does, or she does, and then she's promoting, of course, the release of the book. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Amy Jo Johnson. I think she's a really incredible director. I like her music that she's done and some other things. If you do get to see her at a convention, she's super nice. And so, yeah, go check it out. And I think, and maybe I'm wrong here, Matthew, you don't have to, if you only watched the Amy Jo Johnson Power Rangers run, you don't need to have watched the other 30 years of Power Rangers to step into the Return.
Yes, if you have a basic knowledge of those core 6 Rangers, Rita and Zed, so anywhere in the first 3 seasons from 93 to 96, and you remember Floating Head in a Jar has a bunch of kids, they have multicolored costumes, there's an evil sorceress on the moon, that is all you need to know. This is a sequel to the first 3 seasons of Power Rangers, featuring the original cast, which means technically the first 2.5 seasons, because, you know, the Power Conference...
They haven't gone off to save the world's ecology yet and joined.
They haven't gone to the peace conference.
Oh man, so look, there's a new Power Rangers Godzilla crossover coming up in April. Power Rangers Godzilla 2, I think, is what it's called. Why haven't the Power Rangers teamed up with Captain Planet? That would be the crossover that people would want to read.
I want to say that the Captain Planet rights are like out there in the nonsense.
Aren't they Saban oriented or Hasbro owned or something?
No, Power Rangers was Ted Turner.
Yeah,
it was Turner Network Television who were rather Captain Planet.
Oh, so that would be sorry. Like here we go. Now. Yeah, it's now Zaslav.
I don't even know.
Zaslav! Yeah, no, Warner Brothers holds the Captain Planet rights right now. Oh, but here's the thing, though. The Power Rangers Godzilla thing is a collab between IDW Publishing and Boom Studios and Hasbro and Toei. So, you know, maybe Warner Brothers would say, sure, we'll do a team-up thing with Captain Planet and the Power Rangers. I'd read that. But that's just me.
I think it's actually Toei, which owns the Power Rangers, and Toho, owns Godzilla.
Yeah.
And Toei and Toho are, I don't want to say enemies, but Toei and Toho are kind of like Marvel and DC 10 years ago.
Yeah, but they came
they
together.
Kind of view each rivals. Other as rivals, yeah.
But even like, Marvel and DC were able to put aside their differences and tell us the JLA versus Avengers storyline and all those things. So
yeah, but notice that for 25 years after that, they wouldn't reprint it. And it literally
getting a reprint
took
now.
The death of George Perez for them to ever even talk about it. George had to die. George had to say, it is my dying wish that you schmucks come together and try and put one of my favorite works back in print. And they're like, well, I mean, George, without George, both of our companies would be, you know, dead. I suppose we can do it for George.
Yeah.
I'm just
thanks,
saying.
George.
Yeah, thanks, George.
Yeah. I mean, George was a great man.
Yeah. I mean, we could say that, what's his name? The guy from Rear Window, the bad guy, who was also in the Godzilla movies.
Henry Fonda.
No, not Henry Fonda.
Raymond Burr.
Raymond Burr, that's who I'm thinking of. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. He also died, so maybe that is the reason where these two can set aside their differences and...
You know that
just throwing things out there.
Not actually in the Toho Studios version.
Doesn't matter.
Just in
doesn't matter.
The American version.
It's the only one I could think of that has died recently.
But Raymond Burr died in like 1995.
I know. Dude. That's, you know, recent-ish.
That's
it's in my lifetime. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, come on. I'm just trying to get a Power Rangers Captain Planet comic book. Gah! Come on. How hard has this got to be, people? Make it happen. Zaslav. Anyway, speaking of Power Rangers, I already talked about the Godzilla thing. You know who else who's been doing a bang-up job on Power Rangers?
Who dat?
The new writer of that, of one of the series, I don't know which one she's on now, but Melissa Flores, she's been doing a lot of the Power Rangers stuff, and she's about to launch a whole new universe over at Oni Press with the Nacelleverse. And Rodrigo's going to talk more about this. If you're a fan of RoboForce and Biker Mice from Mars and the Secutars, then Nacelleverse might be right up your alley, right, Rodrigo?
Yep, that's right. I'm looking at Nacelleverse number 0. It all starts here. So there's basically 1, 2, 3, 4. There's 5 properties that this is centered around. Can you guys hear my cat screaming?
No.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's good.
That's okay. I can hear mine too.
So it's Biker Mice from Mars, RoboForce, Sectors, Power Lords, and the Great Garlu.
And oh my God.
I'm familiar with Biker Mice from Mars.
Yep.
Yeah. I remember Power Lords and the Great Garlu from when I was a child. Power Lords were around in like 1980. I'm going to say 80.
I'd have to look at the Power Lords to see if I remember them, but I do know Biker Mice from Mars and RoboForce. So it looks like Rodrigo, they're hitting most of the demographic here with this.
Yeah. If they got one for me and a couple for you guys, this is pretty much where they live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this comic is centered on Garlu, who is trying to return to his planet, but something has happened in his planet and he can't return. So instead he goes on a galaxy-wide adventure in which he meets everyone from those properties at some point. You know, this comic is probably 40 pages if you don't count the ads. So they do cram a lot in. Like he gets to see everybody. And then also there's like a full resolution for this comic. So it's like a complete thing. I mean, there's lots of threads that get opened up that you can be like, oh, well, this will be interesting to look with what the Sectors are doing. Right. But,
name a Sector. That's all. If you're out there and you can name a Sector.
Yeah.
And you can tear it in half. You can
name one Sector.
Timmy.
Dargon was a Sector.
Yeah.
And they have a girlfriend named, like, Ted.
Yeah. There's one named Zach.
Oh, I was close. Like I said Timmy.
The Sectors are all over the place because, like, one is named, like, Pinsor, and another one's named, like, Kevin. No, there's not one named Kevin, but there is one named Zach, I think. All right. So, again, so he goes from planet to planet to planet. So at some point, for example, he gets to Mars, and then the biker mice from Mars are there. So this must be happening after the end of their series, because the biker mice from Mars were... Right, so this isn't like a reset. It's ongoing from the current Biker Mice from Mars comics or media or wherever they're at, right?
Yeah.
That they've returned to Mars. Nice. So that's interesting. It's trying to bring that all together. One of the horrid places that they go to is Detroit. So you can see like desert planet, like dangerous insect planet, Detroit, all equally dangerous.
Right.
I mean, yeah, okay.
So, I liked it. I gotta say, a lot of these properties I'm not familiar with. I would have loved to be familiar with them. When I was a kid, I liked the Biker Mice from Mars, but, you know, it's like, I was very much like a kid in that era where, like, I didn't know about anything unless it was, like, being directly marketed to me through a cartoon. Or maybe if, like, Marvel Comics had, like, you know, ads for something, then I'd be like, oh, I want to check out what this, like, Popoids is. I don't know about Popoids. Yeah. It's like, you know those guys that had like shields and they had like holograms in their shields? Those were cool.
Yeah. The, what were their names? They were the Light Warriors. They were something.
Progesterones.
No, that's different.
No, that's not it. That's not right. Okay. I enjoyed it. Again, a lot of these properties I'm not familiar with, and we don't spend enough time with them for me to be like, oh, this is what their deal is, right? It's like very much like, hey, this guy is here kind of stuff. So taking off some points for that, although that's mostly my fault, I guess. So I'm giving it 3.5 slices of meatloaf. Still very good. Still above average. Art is great. It's done by like a different artist per planet, I want to say.
Oh, cool.
So pretty much. So you do get, it's like, it's like, it's good. And it's sometimes not as good because there is that through line of Garlu being in every planet. So even though each of these places has art that matches the feel of the place they're at, that means that Garlu kind of like warps around and changes. And, you know, technically he is kind of a shapeshifter. So I don't know, maybe that works. Anyway, 3.5 slices of meatloaf. Check it out. If you really want to get in on the ground floor of the future of the Nacelleverse. And yeah, Detroit.
I thought they had the Wild West Cowboys of Mu Mesa, too.
They may show, I don't know what Nacelle toys they have.
Even if they do, they might just be pulling off for now on them.
Could be.
Yeah, they do. They've revived it. So August, let's see, what does it say?
The Colorado Kid.
Yeah. If you take the Biker Mice out, which are the ones that I was already familiar with, and you ask me which of these are most interesting, I would say probably RoboForce. I'd be most interested in reading something about them because there's like a their deal is like there's an implied sadness that they were like built to be superheroes and then they were like immediately out of like immediately they just came up with a new better line of robots and they never got to be superheroes and now they're gonna try it out. So that seems cute. That's a cute premise. Probably least interested here are the Power Lords. They didn't do much for me on the thing, but I wouldn't be opposed to reading something about them.
So announced at San Diego Comic-Con 2023, the company did announce that it had acquired the rights to Cowboys of Mu Mesa and that they will be part of the shared Nacelleverse, but it does not say when, you know, if they're going to be part of this comic book series. They're just saying that they're part of the greater universe. Right. So it would not surprise me, Rodrigo, if they show up or if they get their own their own series.
Yeah, or like one of them, like this is really begging for like a Exiles type story, right? Where like you're having comics set in these worlds, but also you have a group made up of guys from all of these worlds popping around and doing stuff. So it's like you can throw in a Mumesa cowboy in there and they'll be fine. They'll fit right in.
Very cool. Thank you for that, Rodrigo. That comes out, the Nacell Verse number 0 comes out on March 20th. So that is a next week comic. So just be aware of that. And last week on the Major Spoilers podcast, I talked about The Last Ronin 2, Re-Evolution number 1, and how I said that that was going to sell super well. Ladies and gentlemen, it has blown through 140,000 copies already. It's the number one comic. Wow. IDW has surpassed both Marvel and DC. I believe I just saw something float through on the Twitter, formerly X, that it has surpassed any title from Marvel and DC for now 2 weeks in a row. And I know that they are going to get more copies out there. So if you didn't get it last week, you can get it digitally. It's available now. You know, electrons don't cost anything. But if you want it to print, you better let your local comic shop know, because that's where you want to pick those comics up. Also, last week, we had a number of shout-outs to give to people on the show, people who became patrons over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. This week, though, we got nobody. Nobody became a patron this past week over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. And here's the thing. There are going to be some financial things that are going to cause us to have to shut down two of our podcasts. And we don't want that to happen. And in order to keep those two podcasts alive, we need to increase our Patreon pledge amounts by at least $1,000 per month. So if you want to see Legion Clubhouse and Top 5 continue, then we need you to head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers right now. And if you are not a patron, because there are some of you out there who are patrons already that are like, oh, yes, let me look at my finances and I will up my pledge. You are great people. I love you all. But here's a chance for those of you who are not patrons. And I know that there are a lot of you out there. Here's your chance to go and contribute $5 a month, or you can sign up for a full year in advance and get like 2 months free or whatever the discount is. But you can go up and sign up for a silver level membership and keep two podcasts alive that we do. Plus, you'll also get 4 bonus episodes each month when you sign up for the silver level membership. Plus access to Critical Hit a week early, character sheets, I forget what else comes your way. But if you're a gold level, then you get access to all of that stuff. Plus, it's like 8 bonus episodes a month. Plus, you get an inside look at what's really going on at Major Spoilers as part of the VIP live chat. And believe me, if you're sitting there going, wait, you're going to cancel 2 shows. No, it's not me that's canceling 2 shows. It's the economy that's canceling 2 shows. But if you don't want those 2 shows to be canceled, then you definitely want to become a gold member. And get over there, because I will be spilling the beans on a lot of that in the very next VIP live chat. So we're trying to, between now and the end of June, we're trying to up our pledge amounts to an extra $1,000 per month from where we're at today. You can keep 2 shows alive, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Or maybe you just like this show and you just want this show to continue. Go sign up, you know, spread the joy. Keep us as an independent, you know, we're not a big company. We're not McDonald's. We're not Lyft. We're not Uber. We're not for-profit hospitals, not looking at anybody in the room. But those people don't give a crap about you. We're independent. We cannot just pass the cost on to, I don't know, my pocketbook, because that doesn't exist. So we're asking for your help. Patreon.com/majorspoilers. Keep independent productions like this alive going forward. Thank you for your support. I know, right? We need to do that. We do that a lot. Where we just need some Sarah McLachlan, and we need some sad Rob, a very sad Rob face going on. If that doesn't get people to fork over their money and start crying, I don't know what will.
We might have to put Rob to sleep. And nobody wants that.
Like images of Rob, like holding a hot dog, reaching for like brand name mustard. And then he like looks sad and reaches for generic mustard. Look at what you're doing to him.
For a mere $5 a month, we can keep Rob in supply of fine mustard.
And the good mustard.
Yeah. How much does mustard cost these days?
Finest Dijon. $2.99 a bottle.
Does it really? Okay. So we can also maybe get Rob some of the finest ketchups as well for a mere $5 a month. $5 a month.
Dijon ketchups.
Ketchup, yes. The finest ketchup. They come in those little packets.
That's right.
Okay.
They have pre-wrapped sausages, but they pre-wrapped bacon.
If I had $1 million, then I'd be rich. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. It is now time to talk about something that some people in our listening audience are very excited for us to talk about, because Jarmo demanded that we review Doro Hidoro. It's a manga comic, but released through Viz here in the United States for the English adaptation. And in the city known simply as The Hole, there are people walking around that look normal. And then there's other people that may have been turned into a pig, or may have a frog arm, or maybe an insect, or maybe they have the head of an iguana. How does this happen, you wonder? Well, apparently there are doorways to another dimension where sorcerers, you know, people with magical powers, come through and they experiment on the people in the hole with their deadly black arts. And so that's where we get to meet Nikaido and Kamen. Kamen is the one that has the reptile head and complete amnesia. Kamen, Kamen. I think it's because of the lizard.
Yeah, it's Kamen.
Lizard part right. of his body. Yeah.
Like a little.
God, the weird thing is, this guy has no idea what happened to him. And in order for the magic to be broken, they have to find the sorcerer that cast the spell and kill him for the magic to be broken, because that's how magic works, right? The problem is, no magic now works on him. And apparently there's something in his mouth, some body or something in his mouth that will come out when he's about to kill a sorcerer and tell everybody whether this is the one or not. And then things get bloody.
Yeah.
What'd you think there, Matthew? And this goes on for many issues. It's a whole volume. It's like 6 issues.
Yeah. This volume is... Okay. One of the things that I find that I've heard a million times from specifically Western readers in the comic shops that I worked is, oh man, it's really hard to get into this and figure out what's going on. It's really hard for, you know, specific manga, whatever you're talking about.
Is it because of reading the backwards part?
Partly. And I think it's partly because there is a different storytelling. I feel not even just an aesthetic, but sort of a different
like a framework. Thought
process. Behind the whole thing. Yeah, there's like a whole nother, it's like a different country. And I feel like when I sat down to read Doro Hidoro for the very first time, I was lost in seconds. And so I kind of got sidetracked into the art, which is always fun. You know, you have that point where you're like, wow, look at this. This guy's got a big lizard head, or this is a, you know, a giant thing. And I think somebody just stepped on that guy's face. But once you get sidetracked into that, and then you do come back around and there's, you know, an evil clown trying to kill the girl with the big boobs, you're like, wait, okay, now I have to go back a couple of pages. So I spent a lot of my time going back and forth to remember, why does this man with the jug head nose and the balaclava have this problem? Or what's going on over here? And did somebody just eat his brain? So that may be a Matthew problem. But I felt like it was kind of difficult for me to really settle down into the crazy, just literal.
So
nuts.
I finally kind of, you know, after, let's see, it was probably with the reincarnation funeral ceremony. And then shortly after where the bug sorcerer shows up, that I was like, oh, okay, I get it. So maybe the first issue was a lot of head scratching for me. But after that, I felt like I could... You know, that I didn't really have a problem following along what was going on until you start introducing all the various factions in the piece. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to maybe lose a little coherence there. But I think once you, and anytime you start in media res and you're not explaining how the world works, I think that's always a little bit of slow down. I need to read this again kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Point where a character with a heart, like a human heart for a face,
yes,
pops up, and for a second it's in color.
Yeah,
And I'm like, was that like, is that the way it was presented, or is it trying to make Heartface Man more disgusting? Because it did. I really
that came out on a Sunday.
Did it? Oh, that's probably what it was.
Yeah. That's when the color comics.
It was a Prince Valiant Sunday. Yeah, but I kind of felt like I spent a lot of time maybe analyzing the artist's choices and maybe the reason for the artist's choices. And I might have spent more time doing that than I did actually, you know, sort of buying into the narrative, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. What about you, Rodrigo?
Well, I had a great advantage in that I've seen the anime.
Oh, okay. Because I want to come back to that in a little bit. I want to come back to that in a little bit. So,
which starts
ahead.
Up here. But yeah, so I can, like, from that early, first second issue, I was like, if I hadn't already seen the anime, I would be extremely confused about what's happening here. And it's not that the art is bad, it's just that, like, I think that there is kind of a there are conventions to anime and especially to manga and especially to action manga where, like, yeah, it's like you see somebody's face and there's like lines over here and it's like, oh, something's happening over here, and then but they don't show you what it is, and it's like in between those two panels, like a Japanese person is like, I know exactly what's happening, but somebody who doesn't read a lot of manga is like, I don't know what just happened. Fortunately, again, I had watched the anime, so I was like, oh, I remember what's happening. I think that gets better. I think the action gets clearer. Again, I think the artist, who is, whose name I don't remember,
Hayashida.
Starts out with like this proficiency for like drawing characters and models and stuff, but maybe action is not quite as clear, but I feel that it clears up as it goes.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Definitely does.
Yeah. I will say that the opening pages where it's you're in the middle of a fight and people are getting sliced up and heads are rolling and magic is being thrown and people are getting their heads crushed with blood spewing everywhere. Now, again, I don't know how regularly this comic in Japan is released, but I understand for a lot of manga creators that it is a very frantic meeting deadlines, working stooped over, you know, dying at the table because you're working so hard to get an issue out that that I can, to a point when I was first reading this, excusing this as this person has to rush through this in order to meet a deadline. And so it is not, I'll just say the art is not to my liking throughout this book, but I will say that I do notice an improvement by the time you get to the dinner scene towards the end of the book and we get introduced to the wealthy people or the sorcerer group or whatever group this is, the hard head man, all the sorcerers wear masks. Let's just put it that way.
It's like all the sorcerers wear masks. There's kind of a head sorcerer
who eats mushrooms or has a mushroom garden or something.
And has mushroom powers, and the hard head man and the buff lady work for him.
Yeah.
Right.
But they're just a faction of sorcerers. There are other factions of sorcerers as well. But they all use the hole as a testing ground. So the people from the hole hate them universally and probably don't know that there are different factions of, of sorcerers.
Well, and one thing that I think needs to be taken into account is that I think she was 21 or 22 when she started drawing. Hayashida was born in 77, I think. So, you know, you're looking at, this is one of those cases where you're seeing a young artist improving in real time.
Yeah. But it just
better
feels
and better from page to page. And that is one of the things that, you know, we're not used to necessarily in Western comic books, especially the way the serialization, you know, in the manga works. And again, I agree with you, Stephen. There are parts of the art that are absolutely not to my liking. Although Lizard Man jumping a dirt bike over the camera is pretty freaking
awesome. I mean, there are some good parts, but overall, I just found it lacking. But I did see improvement as it went on, and I'm sure by the time you get up to whatever it is, volume 22 or whatever it is now, that the artist is really really awesome, but in this first volume, I just don't care for the art. That being said, yeah. I like the art in the anime, because here's what happened. As soon as I finished reading this, and I was like, well, this is just gore porn crap. I was like, I know that there's an anime based on this. I'll go sit down and watch the anime. And I watched, I think it's the first four episodes of the Netflix series is this first volume. And I will say that I like the animation style very much. And I will say that if you are having trouble understanding what's going on in this book, I think that the anime is a much better adaptation of the source material and clears a lot of things up and makes it more clear, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, it's a different setup. So, and they have the benefit of having all of this stuff to look back on and being like, okay, well, let's tighten this up.
Exactly. You have a lot of context to go forward with rather than, you know, seeing this poor mangaka having to go, you know, a week at a time, a month at a time.
Yeah.
Kind of putting
That's why I said
I don't. Even if she came in with a plan, you know.
Yeah. So the art is not to my liking. There's some misogynistic moments in the book and also in the anime that I'm just like, you know, the minute that a girl shows up and she takes off her top and she has boobs, everyone's like, what? A girl? It's like, yeah, of course you could be a girl. But it's just like, you know, kind of moments that let me just be like, I'm sorry. This kind of lessens the quality of the work, in my opinion. But I understand. Different culture, et cetera. You do what you want to do. But those were some also things that I didn't care for. Also, this is probably not a book for kids, although I probably tip my hand by asking both of my kids very out loud, hey, have you guys ever watched the Doro Hit Doro or read the manga? I probably tip my hand that they're now like, if Dan's watching this, maybe we should go check it out too. I think this is pretty violent. This is really, like I said, gore porn. It is like body parts are flying, blood is spraying everywhere. It was not to my
mind. I was definitely feeling some Akira influence.
Yeah, definitely.
The last couple of issues. And, you know, not just in terms of the flying, spraying, monstrous blood, but, you know, the whole biker gang stuff and all of the, you know, the moments that kind of build up to, by the way, this volume ends at a very bad point.
Yeah.
I agree. Very mad about the way this volume ends, where it's just like, it's almost like mid page, just like, hi, I'm the guy with a heart for a head. Yay, click. Yeah.
On the other hand, in regards to that, if you compare this, and again, we really shouldn't compare because they are apples to oranges, but of the manga series that we have been reading here, compared to My Hero Academia, this book books. It moves fast compared to My Hero Academia.
I agree. And the pacing is one of the positives for me. Because a lot of times, you know, again, as a Western reader and someone who worked in a comic store, you hear, oh, these are glacial. These are glacial paces. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think I read 10 volumes of Akira. Never saw Akira.
Yeah.
He doesn't even show up like volume 357. Yeah. But this books, this does move. And aside from, you know, a lot of those points where I don't get contextually what's going on here because of the different culture. Mm-hmm. It almost feels like it's paced more for either a Western audience or an audience that's becoming like inured to Western tropes and Western storytelling. You figure 2000 to 2008, 2009, you've got your Matrixy stuff. You've got all of these, you know, movies that are really just affecting everything, culture in the West and culture in the East. And it's neat to kind of get that feel of, yeah, we're going to do this. Stuff's happening. Crazy stuff's happening. I don't know what any of it is, but boy, woo. Guy's got a heart for a head.
Yeah,
I'm going to have nightmares about that guy with a heart for a head.
It looks like this was released monthly, or at least it was released in the book monthly Ikki, IKKI. So I don't, and that's a monthly magazine. So this series was released monthly, but it just feels like it's one that was released weekly.
Well,
so anyway, I mean, that's just my biggest issue, I guess, is just the art is not to my liking. I like the world. I really enjoy this idea of the world, and I kind of want to know, is there anything outside or beyond the city, or are these people, have they been intentionally enclosed in some kind of a pocket universe that is only the whole, and for the sole purpose of the sorcerers experimenting.
Right. Yeah, the greater or the universe of Dorohedoro is really interesting, because it's not immediately obvious how everything works, right? Like, mm-hmm. there are things that happen like seasonally, mm-hmm. because the wizards keep or the sorcerers keep pumping their magic into the place. There are now sort of like natural phenomena that are magical and things like that. Living there sucks, but these people are kind of free. Like, they don't, there isn't a lot of structure for them to like follow behind. So they're just kind of like small communities. It's like mm-hmm. interesting. Like, clearly a lot of thought went into how things operate in both places. So for me, that's kind of what drew me or what kept me watching the anime. Like, the characters are cool and everything, but I'm like, yeah, that's fine. But really, it's like the little things. It's like figuring out like, oh, this is like a different part of the whole and things are different here. Mm. Like, there are different people who behave differently for reasons that have been thought up that are like reasonable. So yeah, it's pretty interesting.
So you've gone through, there's only one season of the anime, right?
There's only one season of the anime. Yeah.
Okay. Is there a planned second season?
It covers more than this. Like it's got to cover at least two volumes.
Oh, I'm guessing it's probably more. Cause like I said, the first four episodes, I think cover this first volume. And that's all I watched after it got to the end of that.
Yeah, I don't remember how many episodes it is. There is a second season, and I think it is coming to Netflix, which is where this originally was.
Well, is this a Netflix original, or is it just something that Netflix is currently releasing on streaming? Because
it's hard to tell. I think it says Netflix original, but Netflix original anime can mean a lot of things about how much Netflix was involved. I think. For example, they were probably more involved with like Edgerunners than they were with like Dorohedoro.
Ah, so it was released internally in Japan and then on Netflix. So this is not a Netflix original series.
Okay.
Because I was going to give Netflix huge props for doing this all in with Japanese language and subtitles and everything. So
I was going to say, weren't they behind that Ultraman revival a year or two ago?
Yeah.
Or was that just another thing that they stuck their name on?
No,
I don't know. Again, I don't know how involved they were, but yeah, there have been at least two Ultraman series that have come out through Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one that I'm thinking of is the one where they turn Ultraman into the Power Rangers, which is literally like six Ultraman and a super team, and they each have like individual abilities.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay, so I guess for bottom line here, for me, I like the premise and I like the story. The art is a little bit too not to my liking. And I don't want to say gross because a lot of it is there for shock value, I understand, because you're trying to get people's attentions. But it feels, like I mentioned a couple of times, it feels very gore porny, just violence for violence sake. And I'm not a fan of that. So for me, I think I would say pass on volume one of this series myself. That being said, I would say yes to the anime, if that makes any sense. I know that seems really weird to say, but I appreciated the anime more than I appreciated the book. What say you, Matthew?
This is one of those series that made some of the weirdest connections in my head. And the closest thing that I can tell you that it reminded me of was Gilbert Shelton's Wonder Warthog, which was an underground comic of the late 1960s.
They do something with the biker mice from Mars.
Maybe, but it had the same sort of almost grotesquerie to the art, to get your attention, to really, show you that this is a world that's weird and bizarre and off-putting. If you are sensitive to body horror, as I am, I tried to read Parasite once and Junji Ito had to come and literally like just rock me to sleep that night. But if you're sensitive to body horror, this is not for you. brains a flying and blood a flying. But if you're really looking for something that is the traditional, the proverbial weird Japanese thing, the widget, I feel like you could do a lot worse. This is really well paced. I feel like the art is intricate, even if some of it is, you know, kind of, what am I looking at the intricacies of? I don't want to know. But yeah, it's interesting just to read this volume and see this creator as she gets better and better and better page over page over page. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, but if you were somebody who showed a proclivity towards manga and, or I said manga, like I'm from Kansas, if for a proclivity towards these type of stories, or if you really, really like Herschel Gordon Lewis, I would definitely, you know, throw it in your direction.
Rodrigo, what say you?
It's interesting. I will agree that the anime does a better job of sort of streamlining what's happening, and it's already out, and you can watch a lot more than this story covers. I think this is worth checking out. Again, because the world building of it is done, I feel, very expertly. The problem is that if you don't like gore, if you don't like body horror, if you don't like grungy environments or callous people or whatever, then you have to put up with a lot to get to that stuff. But if this is sort of the story that you want, then this might be for you. I enjoyed it. Again, I've watched the anime, I watched the anime already, so reading this was fun. It was nice. It was a nice place to come back to, even though it's so spooky and weird.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Rodrigo. And thank you, Matthew. And thank you, dear listeners, for checking us out this week. And also thank you, Charmo, for recommending this book for us. It's always fun to read stuff, even if we don't care for it in the end, or some of us don't care for it in the end, or maybe we like something that you don't care for. And that's perfectly okay. Different strokes for different folks. Next week on the show, because Rodrigo demanded it, he pulled me aside the other day, pushed me up against the wall and said, "Listen, man, if you don't talk Claudia and Rex Volume 1 next week, I'm out of here." So Claudia and Rex Volume 1 next week on the Major Spoilers Podcast. Why? Because Rodrigo demanded it, and we know that you love comics, and we do too, and we will talk with you soon.
Had the X-ray vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven, it's like a man of iron. Might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a gang sign throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2024 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.